Hello, and welcome to the AIA's PodNet on Design. I'm Phil Simon with the AIA. We're going to be discussing design with Antoine Predock, FAIA, recipient of the 2006 AIA Gold Medal, the highest honor the AIA confers on an individual whose significant body of work has a lasting influence on the theory and practice of architecture. First of all, congratulations on having been selected as a 2006 Gold Medal recipient. It's a wonderful recognition for a remarkable body of work.
Thank you. It's an unbelievable honor. I'm still floating.
That's great. You're known for your unique ability to design highly contextual works. How has receiving the gold medal changed your approach to design and your firm's approach to design?
I think it reinforces my commitment. Had I not received the gold medal, I don't think anything would have changed in the practice. Would have kept moving forward without the R word, retirement, in my vocabulary till the bitter end. With the gold medal, it's just, you know, a mandate to look for higher levels of excellence. So it's just it's a feeling of peer recognition. There were many stages that it went through the process, and the original nomination coming from the Committee on Design, mm-hmm. which was it's an important design committee and one that I was a steering committee member of in the 80s. So starting with that and then moving through it, so there's an accretion of process and it just makes me feel so supported by my peers, and makes me eager to continue full blast, and it can't do anything but help. I think when I got the news, I said, now I can put the pedal to the metal.
That's great. We're talking with Antoine Predock, the 2006 AIA Gold Medal recipient. You're also known for studying art with Elaine de Kooning and co-director of a dance company. What skills can the arts contribute to the architect?
I think the thing that struck me when I, as an architecture student, when I first encountered the world of the artist, was that there was no sense of having a job or having work, but simply your life played out through what you did, through what you made. And that really stuck with me, because I really feel that about architecture. I don't feel that I've never felt that I have a job or that I'm ever going to work. I think many of us feel that way. I don't think it's unique to me. I think we all here because either we're in architecture because we're either masochists or we really love it. And that connection to life through work is something that overlaps with certain artists' lives. So I consider my work is work as an artist, and the pragmatics and the support science that leads to making a building is, of course, right there, parallel and highly prioritized. But it's a special world that I want to inhabit, and I do inhabit. It's very unique. The world of dance, the realm of dance, was central to my experience, probably starting in the 60s through the 70s, where I was co-director of a dance company for a while with a great dancer named Jennifer Linnell. And I think that there's a choreographic imperative in any great building, where there's an understanding that a vantage point of moving from place to place, almost like a scenic highway overlooks, you know, where you move from place to place. And in moving from place to place, things happen to you, and things rub off spatially, phenomenologically, in architecture. So that's why I talk about dance as well as painting. And painting, actually, the gestural aspect of painting, when I studied with de Kooning, that was in the 60s, when it was action painting in New York, full blast, with the great masters, Franz Kline, Joan Mitchell, Helen Frankenthaler, Rothko, Pollock, the whole gamut. And the notion of the body making a gestural move, making a painting, making a work, really stuck with me. And that's how I work. I work with clay in that fashion. I work when I draw. It's big gestures. It's not that kind of stuff. And when I look at a screen and we're collaging digitally, and there's some panels on exhibit out in front that show some of the digital collages that I like to work on with my team. So a lot of it goes back to those early days and early overlaps with other arts.
It's a collision of in a sense, with the collages, that you're combining the science, the artistry, and then it all kind of blends. Is that characterizing?
Yeah, I think it's circumstantial to each process, to each project, how that unfolds. I don't have a central, a codified kind of methodology. I don't have that. Because I think that you never know. I'm ready for surprises, and you know, in process, and you never know what you're getting into until you start the process. And buildings are all about process, as we all know. It's not about that thing standing out there. It's what led to it, and the intensity and richness of process make it come alive, give it a spiritual life.
Speaking about spirituality and vision, many award-winning architects talk about those and other intangibles in design. Yet, as you've already alluded to, there are some rules-governed approaches to design, methodical approaches, and building codes is one that comes to mind. And the question is, how do you engage both dimensions, the spiritual vision dimension, with this hard and fast limit called building codes?
Well, I'm a double agent. I'm an agent for the gods of architecture. I think they're here on the metal, the gods of architecture. And also double agent for practicality, life safety, all the things that we all better deliver on, and environmental response. So I don't see any conflict or any confusion. I mean, some code issues are so ridiculous. Sometime I want to take all the code officials and on a tour around the world and show them, you know, that there aren't suicidal children in Lijiang, China, where their open canals have no guardrails. And you have these magical public spaces. So, you know, I think we've gone way overboard in many code areas. So I abide by them. It's important to do that. But I think that you always have to look for interpretations. You know, there. For example, we work with AirUp occasionally. And instead of taking life safety issues in terms of fire protection just verbatim, they will generate a model, and they'll say, well, where's the smoke going, and make a model of it. Where are the temperatures that would affect steel structural stability, and demonstrate that, you know, this area is relatively cool, so expose the steel, never mind intumescent paint. Work to develop a model based on reality, and I think that's where code should head, reality models versus kind of blanket down from high decisions about codes. But I work within them, and I don't see any conflict being an artist working within those constraints.
You're listening to the AIA's PodNet on Design, and we're talking with Antoine Predock. How would you describe the role context plays in your design, and describe what it means both in the rural context and in the urban context?
I think that context is a really loaded word. Being contextual is a loaded word. I never talk about that because it's a loaded word and it's a polluted word. It so often implies nostalgic relationships to other buildings, or paying close attention to what, you know, your neighbor's doing. And of course that's important. And at Stanford and at Rice, where there are deep-seated historic context, I've done buildings. But the context to me means, if I ever use the word, it means going to deep time. Deep time, imagining a road cut or an excavation right here in L.A. where we are, down to bedrock, understanding the deepest geologic strata. Architecture can respond to that. We all can use our X-ray vision. As architects, we have that. And we can delve into deeper time and time travel to the earliest cultural layers. This was a naked desert basin with chaparral, with watercourses that would run intermittently, lined with sycamores toward the San Gabriel Mountains, those watersheds coming off the mountains. But it was a desert place. If you go to the top of Pico Boulevard, where the oil jacks are pumping, you'll see native landscape. And it's nothing like the Hollywoodized L.A. basin that we all imagine. And we've been delivered. You know, I think that's great. But if you look at the deeper time of a place, you understand that there have been interventions that maybe, are, for better or worse, are artificial. And I think to work your way up through strata, through cultural strata, through the layers of time, thinking about making a building, for me is, you know, the bottom line, and not just to say, well, what's next door, what are the scale relationships, where's that cornice line? Of course you pay attention to that. So that's sort of in an urban context, in a natural context. And by the way, the road cut, the imagining of places, urban or rural, it doesn't matter. It's the same, for me, the same investigation. And it's about a timeless encounter, a poetic timeless encounter, a poetic adventure.
As someone who's been recognized for a lifetime contribution to architecture, what have you learned in your career that would be of value to an emerging architect?
Find an inner place of belief, an inner place, and it sounds very mystical. And I'm white hair and I'm from the West, so I can be kind of new agey about it. But find that inner place and trust it and never depart from it. Keep your flame alive. Let's say you're an intern, you got to do, you know, CAD drawings in a corporate studio or office of stair details or something. Do them. Keeping your flame alive as you're doing it. Keeping the double agency is important. Double agent for the gods of architecture, for the god of architecture. While you're doing whatever you're doing, do whatever you're doing well. But establish that belief system. Decide whether this is your life or not, first of all. And if it isn't, get the hell out of it. And once you know, once you've established that, and you believe, and you're a believer, act. Every action should come from that inner belief system. It's my religion. Architecture.
Thank you, Mr. Prejock, for generously taking time to talk with us today. And thank you for joining us in this AIA podcast. Please check the AIA PodNet website at www.aia.org/podcasts for information on this and other podcasts. Thank you.
Thank you.